Starting, please. Good morning, this is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the September 15th, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also being provided telephonically for access by the public. PJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the participants to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning, this is Corinne Myers, and this is the annual meeting of the Board of Commissioners. This meeting is being held in person with additional telephonic access being provided to the public. Today's agenda and related documents and information are available on the RI Housing website. If the teleconference portion is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Vice Chairman James Thorson will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak during the meeting, please state your name each and every time. And with that, Mr. Vice Chairman, I turn it back to you to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson, and I'd like to call this meeting to order. The current time is 9:34 a.m. for the record. And Carol, would you please conduct a roll call?
Yes. Commissioner Barry?
Here.
Commissioner McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Thorne.
Here.
Commissioner Thornton.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Present.
Commissioner Dwyer.
Here.
Commissioner Saul.
Here.
Have a full house.
Thank you, Carol. It's Jim Thorson again. I would like for, at this time, before we get started, I just wanted to welcome everybody. It's such a beautiful day, and it's wonderful to see a full complement of people in the boardroom on such a beautiful day, and we are back all the way, I think. That's really good news. With that, what I'd like to do is to introduce board action number one, which is the approval of the minutes of the board meeting held on August 18th, 2002. Do I have a motion?
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second, Maria Berry.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. And this moves us to agenda item number two, which is my opening remarks. And I think I just made them. We have a very busy agenda, so I'm going to keep this short. We just came through the primary. I think you all know. There's a lot going on at Rhode Island Housing, and we're going to talk about some of the things that are happening today. Many items on the agenda, so I won't take any more time. And with that, what I'd like to do is to turn it over to Carol.
Thank you. Thank you, Director. Let me focus on our first gen. This is a new program that we launched in February. And since we've launched, we pre-approved 417 applicants for assistance and closed on 23 loans. Residency in one of the eligible cities is required, and those cities are Providence, Pawtucket, Woonsocket, East Providence, a small portion of Newport, and Central Falls. 48% of households that have closed on a first-gen grant reside in Pawtucket, and 57% of all households identify as people of color. I took a look at the income levels of the folks that were coming through the program this morning, and it's a low of $47,000 per year, a high of $126,000. Huge range of incomes coming through this program. We've provided you with statistics on the Homeowner Assistance Fund. We've committed almost 50% of the state award for the program and provided assistance to almost 800 households. We're continuing to clear out the backlog of applications in the pipeline, but we'll likely need to reopen the program to applicants that never completed their applications in the portal, dot there, and see whether or not that will allow us to disperse all of the money. If not, we'll have to have a public opening of that program. It's interesting, this program is much slower than rent relief because of the hurdles, right? The information and documentation that's required to participate in this program, and I'll work with servicers in order to get the money out the door. Portfolio delinquency continues to stay below prior year delinquency. The seriously delinquent category is almost 50% below us last year. Leslie and her team continues to monitor our portfolio and respond to requests for assistance from our borrowers. We continue to process applications through the state site acquisition program. Funding has been awarded to 15 properties, and to date, four loans closed. Our development group is moving board-approved projects to firm commitment. We expect to bring them back to you at the December or January board meeting. We're continuing to work with our partners at the Department of Housing, the State Department of Housing, to create the new programs that were authorized in the budget. We had a meeting on the 13th, it seems like yesterday, but a couple of days ago, to review drafts to discuss what these programs should look like. So we've sent over the drafts to the Housing Department, and they'll finalize their review, and hopefully we can get these programs out the door later in October. We've updated the stats on rent relief for you. I've told you in the past that Ramon closed down the program on September 30th and transfer of funds to the state. We still don't know exactly how much will go to the state, but there will be money there for the state housing department to do some activities with those resources. We've slowly been reducing staff, but we'll keep three staff on board till the end of the year to wind down the program to complete all of the compliance reporting that needs to be done. We've outlined a number of ribbon cuttings and project celebrations that have been going on. We've provided you with a memo on the primary election results. Amy prepared that for us. And lastly, we hosted our three bond underwriters, analytics firm, and swap advisory session on current opportunities in the market. Commissioner Orth, Commissioner Cabral, and a team member from the Housing Department participated in that, and Rear, I believe, you participated via telephone. Mm-hmm. So we meet annually, and it's really very informative. So please feel free to come next year when we have it. And it's a great opportunity to network with folks. So let me stop there if you have questions.
Any questions?
Yeah, I have a quick question about the emergency housing vouchers. I know it's been challenging for folks to lease up, and I see that there are still looking for apartments. Are any of those folks at risk of losing their voucher?
I'm not aware of anyone being at risk of losing vouchers, James.
No, the president.
No. I mean, it's just challenging to find a unit, even with incentives.
Yep.
That's really the challenge for people.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions,
Kevin,
if I might. Regarding the Homeowner Assistance Fund,
mm-hmm.
Carol, there's still about 1,400 applications, it looks like,
mm-hmm.
in process. You mentioned working down a backlog, but then opening it up perhaps. So I guess you have a sense that those aren't going to qualify, or what?
So, Peter, did you?
I can take that, certainly. So that number has since been reduced to 900. So we have 900 in the pipeline. The good news is that we're no longer assigning applications to underwriters. Everything is in the queue. We're presently at around a 43% approval rate. We're presently at around almost 27,000 average grant. So we've done the math. If and when we do reopen, like Carol said, we're going to first address those who started the application but didn't quite complete it before the March 14th deadline. Now, the big wild card, of course, is what percent of those will qualify, and we've done a lot of sensitivity analysis.
So is that $26,000 award, that sounds like it's maybe, 24 months of debt service?
So, good question. So that's the maximum term, and we, when we were crafting the program, we looked at average mortgages amount, we talked to loan servicing, so the max assistance is 24 months or $50,000.
So we're giving
sounds like we're giving about the max for most recipients.
Well, the max is 50,000.
Well, no, with 24.
Yes, sometimes though it could be 3 months worth of assistance, so it varies. You know, it's nice that we can also do various programs to help a consumer. We can do a reinstatement, which brings them current with their servicer, and then can do some forward making payments as well.
Okay. Okay. Just one other question, if I might. The next funding round and the consolidated funding round, I just want to bring up our private activity bond volume cap and whether, you know, we should make note of that or something in this consolidated application. I don't know if you thought about asking recipients only to request, you know, maybe 55% to meet the 50% test, or whether we should be, I don't know, conscious of that when we go out with it.
This is Ann. Yes, we have thought about it. We are working through sort of what those guardrails would look like, and we're going to make a proposal to finance. I presume at this point it will be the minimum amount of bonds with some sort of taxable tail.
Okay, so be out in front versus, okay, great, thank you. No other questions?
All right, Kevin, thank you. Carol, I don't think it's appropriate to ask this question, get a response to this question, but I want to pose a question. If we could get a presentation and whether the board members would be open to getting a presentation on the volatility in the financial markets and how that impacts Rhode Island Housing in our outlook going forward. How would that reflect in our volumes and our ability to originate loans? And so I'm looking for an overview of market volatility in general as it relates specifically to interest rates and mortgage volume and how that may impact us and our outlook going forward.
Happy to do that.
With that, I'd like to move on to board action. Item number four is Jim Thorson again, and we are going to talk about approval of external charitable donations and contributions. For that, we have James Comer, who will present committee action number four. James.
Good morning. Thank you, Director Thorson. This is James Comer. We have one donation this month. It is for $225 for attendance at three staff attendance at the Providence Journal Reader's Choice Awards, which occurred last evening. It was to support the homeownership team as they were nominated and one of the three finalists for best mortgage lender in the state. In what I can only imagine was a grave miscarriage of justice, they were not successful in that. However, it's a great honor for the team, and congratulations are due to Peter and his group for being there. So a good event, and we're happy to support it.
How long do we have to order a recount?
I'm in contact with the Journal right now, Steve. Yeah.
Great. Oh, it's Jim Thorson again. Thank you, James. I just wanted to ask for a motion on committee action number four.
Can I make a motion to approve?
We have a motion. We have a second. Are there any questions? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Brings us to committee act. That brings us to board action number five, which is approval of pre-qualification of the residential real estate appraisal firms that we. Talk about this last month.
Management committee.
Okay, so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Pagonis, who is the director of home ownership, will present board action number five. Peter.
Good morning. This is Peter Pagonis. Thank you. This RFA is to seek approval to establish a roster of residential real estate appraisal firms to support the single family loan origination and loan servicing operations. To approve a mortgage application, we need to look at the collateral, and the main vehicle for this, of course, is the appraisal. We work with licensed appraisals in the state of Rhode Island, and we put out an RFP in May 2022 and asked potential appraisers to fill out the RFP and submit them accordingly. 10 firms responded. And a committee of Rhode Island Housing employees in loan servicing, home ownership, met and established the roster. Out of the 10 firms that submitted, 10 were approved. In terms of volume, The single family appraisers will work with the mortgage broker division and the loan center, and in terms of the loan servicing side, they will evaluate and appraise distressed properties. The selected firms are selected for a period of 2 years with an option to renew each engagement for an additional 1 year. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. It's Jim Thorson again. And with that, what I'd like to do is to entertain a motion for approval.
Mr. Chair, this is Beth Dwyer. Can I ask a couple questions?
Well, after we take the motion and get
the motion to approve, Josh saw.
Okay. So was that a motion or was that a question?
I'll make a motion, sure.
Okay. We have a motion. We have a second. Now, it's time for questions, comments, and concerns.
Thank you, Mrs. Beth Dwyer. How do you select the appraisal? Number one, I assume they're all licensed, right?
Absolutely.
is it rotational or is it?
That's exactly what we do. We select them on a round robin basis. During the refi boom, if you will, of last year, there were times where some appraisers couldn't take the order and we would just go to the next appraiser in line.
So after the gin, I'm sorry, I'm new to the board.
No problem.
That's where I am. After the 3 years, the 2 plus 1,
yep.
can they reapply?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have the majority have actually been on this list for probably around 12 years or so. And we're fortunate that we think we have a very strong list.
Thank you.
This is Kevin. I always have a question.
Kevin.
I see that minority ownership or activities, I think, was one of the scoring criteria. And coincidentally, white appraisal scored highest there. But could you maybe talk to how we can ensure that appraisers don't discriminate, I guess, and particularly when appraising homes in minority areas?
Great question. So we have a colleague in the homeownership area on staff who is an appraiser, and he has been through various trainings and educational forums on this topic, and he does review certain appraisals, certain high-risk appraisals, and in general, that is on his radar on a regular basis, and he's quite aware of that topic as a topic in we are seeing nationally.
Are you aware of, say, the composition of the ethnicity of appraisers within these companies? For instance, do we have, you know, black and brown appraisers going out to black and brown neighborhoods?
I would say very few minority-owned appraisers in the state. And a constant topic of discussion is also that it's a very aging industry, and we don't have people 20s or 30 years old going into the business. Now, some people say, well, that could be a moot point, because we're moving away from your traditional appraisal and going more to a repository-based electronic database that will determine the value. So two things going on there.
Right. Okay. So you feel good about our efforts in that regard?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Hearing none. I'd like to call a motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes appear to have it. Which brings us to board action number 6. It's Jim Thorson introducing approval of pre-qualification for commercial real estate appraisal and market study firms. And with that, we'll have Ann Berman, our Director of Real Estate Development, board action number 6. Ann.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Ann Berman. So similar to home ownership, the multifamily group also maintains a roster of appraisers, and we also issued an RFP in the spring. So this request for action is for authorization to establish a roster of commercial real estate appraisal and market study firms to provide industry standard appraisals and market studies for the real estate lending programs that we administer. So we utilize appraisals and market studies in nearly all of our transactions to ensure our loan recommendations are consistent with our multifamily underwriting requirements. Historically, we've probably ordered about 30 appraisals this a year, but based on the current pipeline and additional funding program, we're on target to order up to about 75 appraisals a year for the next several years. So we maintain a roster of qualified firms and then select an appraiser for each development project through a request for quotation tailored to the specific assignment. So we issued our RFP in April. It was posted on our website, the state's purchasing website. We also e-blasted all of the appraisers on our list and Mass Housing's list in an effort to try and broaden our reach. So we received proposals from 9 firms, 3 of which are new to Rhode Island Housing. A committee of 6 folks, 3 of whom are actually licensed commercial appraisers, reviewed the proposals, and we determined that all 9 firms are qualified and able to support our lending programs. So we are seeking approval of the firms that submitted the proposals. And a little bit different than the single family program, our list will stay constant until the next time we issue an RFP, which we do about every 4 years.
Thank you, Ann. It's Jim Thorson. Do we have any questions, comments, or well, I'm going to call a motion first. I'm going to ask for a motion.
This is Kevin Orr, so move.
Kevin moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Go ahead. Second, Marie Berry.
Marie Berry, thank you. Comments, questions, concerns? I have a couple of questions. Hopefully these are not trick questions. I see that there's one new appraiser on the list, and I imagine this list is fairly stable, but can you tell us how many of these firms are Rhode Island firms, or are any of them
None of these firms are based in Rhode Island.
Okay. Are there any commercial appraisers?
There are some, and there are several on the state's list, and we can still use them if they're on the state list. They just chose not to respond to this RFP.
Okay.
There's also one that's on Peter's list that's both a residential and commercial, so we will continue to use him. Several of these firms are Boston-based or between Boston and Rhode Island, so they're pretty familiar with our market.
Okay. And what's the market like for real estate appraisers now? How long does it take to get an appraisal?
Too long. Similar to what Peter was saying, we have appraisers who, like, we're too busy, we can't take any more assignments. Some of these can be pretty complicated, and we're seeing wait times of 8 weeks to get some of these done. They are busy. I don't know, Maria is maybe seeing the same thing at Bank of America, but it's challenging.
Yeah, we definitely are. Resources across the board for supporting projects. Everything has to get really queued up as early as possible.
On the residential side, it's about 4 days, given the lower volume. Yeah.
Right. Quite as complicated.
Ours are also 150 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, does anyone else have any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And again, the ayes have it. Which brings us to board action number 7. It's Jim Thorson again. The board action 7 is the approval of reauthorization of engagement of Morris, Manning, and Martin LLP. And for that, Corinne Myers, our general counsel, will present on board action number 7. Corinne?
Thank you. This is Corinne speaking. Staff is recommending the reengagement of the Washington, D.C. law firm Morris, Manning, and Martin LLP for legal assistance in connection with HUD's solicitation of Section 8 contract administration services. The firm, and in particular attorneys Andy Moore and Kelly Kroll, were originally solicited and engaged by Mass Housing, our partner agency, with respect to a legal challenge to a previous HUD solicitation. Since that time, over the past about 5 years, the New England HFAs have determined that their interests are generally aligned where HUD's procurement activities are concerned, and that there are some efficiencies to be gained by sharing counsel. So the New England states have signed on individually as clients of the firm, including RA Housing in 2017 and 2018. We are now seeking to do so again. The firm has particular expertise in federal procurements, both strategy and in bringing challenges, and now they have very deep familiarity with the PBC program in particular. Andy is not proposing to change the terms of the fee agreement from our previous engagement, only to restate our commitment to working together on a joint representation basis, given that the new procurement from HUD is of a slightly different style than the previous. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Take questions after the motions. Do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve. This is Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Do I have a second?
Kevin Orth, I second it.
Thank you, Kevin. Now it's time for comments, questions, and concerns.
Question, leaving the management committee, you mentioned that both the governor's office and my office reached out to extend the period for response for the solicitation. Has it been extended? And what has been the change?
Thank you. The solicitation was extended for an additional 30 days, I believe, approximately mm-hmm. 30 days for comments, and there haven't been any further extensions or changes.
This is extremely important, so I'm very happy that you're providing an update and that I'm glad that we're engaging and continuing that engagement with the Lawson.
Thank you.
Other comments? Questions?
This is Beth Ward. I just have a clarifying question. You initially said mass housing, but then you said all of New England. Is this is all six states?
That's correct. That's correct.
Anyone else? Okay. For board action number 7, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Here's the ayes have it. This is Jim Thorson. It brings us to board action number 8, and that is approval of a real estate tax service vendor. And for that item, we're going to ask Leslie McKnight, our Assistant Deputy Director of Loan Servicing, to present on board action number 8.
Thank you. This is Leslie McKnight. This morning I am presenting an RFA for approval to engage a real estate tax service vendor. On July 1st, Rhode Island County issued a request for proposal. We sought proposals from qualified firms to provide real estate tax support services for the agency's mortgage loan servicing and sub-servicing portfolios. The request for proposal was posted on Rhode Island Housing's website and the website for the State of Rhode Island Division of Purchases. It was also distributed to Rhode Island Housing's RFP mail distribution list and sent directly to vendors who perform this work. Two national vendors submitted responses. The responses were reviewed and scored by a committee of staff members based upon the criteria set forth in Attachment B. Loretta LLC received the highest score. Loretta is our current tax service vendor. Staff find their application to be user-friendly and have been satisfied with their performance under the existing contract. Although per loan pricing proposed by CoreLogic Tax Solutions is lower than Loretta's per loan pricing fee, CoreLogic has also proposed a conversion fee for each loan, which will result in an overall higher cost over the life of the contract. For that reason, staff is recommending re-engagement of Loretta LLC. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. It's Jim Thorson, and I'd like to request a motion to approve board action number 8.
Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Motion by Leanne. Do I have a second?
Second, Mrs. Steve.
Steve, all those in, comments, questions, or concerns for Leslie?
Leslie, I appreciate you breaking it down how, because when you look at the numbers, but, you know, it's the back-end stuff, the conversion thing, that ultimately the life of the contract would have been more expensive. So I think that's important to point out. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. This brings us to board action number 9. And it's Jim Thorson again, introducing board action number 9, approval of appointment of MERS corporate signing officers. And for this, Peter Pagonis will present.
Thank you. This is Peter Pagonis. This RFA is for approval of the appointment of signing officers for the purpose of Rhode Island Housing's membership in the Mortgage Electronic Registration System, also known as MERS. MERS owns and operates an electronic registry which tracks the servicing rights and ownership of mortgages throughout the country. We became a MERS member in 2016, and as part of that membership, we obtained a corporate resolution for MERS through which by Rhode Island Housing employees are designated as MERS signing officers and execute certain duties such as executing mortgage discharges on behalf of MERS. MERS requires that the signing officers are officers and their employees of the MERS member. We ask that the Chief Financial Officer, Assistant Deputy Director of Loan Servicing, Director of Home Ownership, and any Assistant Director of Home Ownership or Loan Servicing be appointed as MERS signing officers. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. It's Jim Thorson again, and for Board Action Number 9, I'd like to request a motion.
Motion to approve. This is Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Second.
Leanne, I'll second.
Thank you, Leanne. Time for questions, comments, and concerns. Anyone? Okay, I'll ask a question. Peter, you know, we passed this through Management Committee and it seems very straightforward and almost ministerial in nature. Is there anything we need to be worried about as a board on this that we haven't already seen in the either the explanation you provided or in the documents we were given in the agenda package?
Absolutely not. As I mentioned, we adopted it in 2016 and it was greatly appreciated by our participating lenders, and it's a, for lack of a better word, a product or a process that's widely accepted and frankly expected in the secondary market.
Thank you, Peter. So it's Jim Thorson again. With that, what I'd like to do is request that all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. This brings us to board action item number 10. Good thing these pages are numbered. And this is board action item number 10, which is the approval of delegation of corporate authority. And with that, Corinne Myers will present board action number 10. Corinne?
Thank you. This is Corinne Myers speaking. This action is regarding signatory authority for the corporation. Specifically, it's for the authorization of designated officers and employees to execute and deliver any contracts, documents, or other instruments that may be entered into by RA Housing under this enabling act. This designation authorizes the chair, vice chair, executive director, or her designee, deputy executive director, and chief financial officer to sign on behalf of the corporation. This designation supersedes any previous designations. Staff considers this a housekeeping matter. RA Housing's corporate signatory authority was last updated by the board in September 2021. Our goal is to review and renew the authority on approximately an annual basis. We ask that this designation be approved for, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again. For that, what I'd like to do is request a motion to approve board action item number 10. Do I have a motion?
I'm making a motion for approval.
Approved. Do I have a second?
Second.
Josh Sald. Any comments or questions? It's Jim Thorson. Corinne, I'm going to ask one question. I imagine that much like the last item, this is largely ministerial in nature. What do we do in events if there's turnover of the signatory authority? How are they effectively excised from the authority? Is there a note that goes out to people, or is it just a how do we memorialize that?
Thank you for asking. That's a good question. This is Corinne Myers speaking. The signatory authority tracks the position held by the individual rather than by name. So as positions turn over, as individuals become employed by the corporation and leave their employment or leave their board service, the the designation doesn't need to be updated. We update on an annual basis to make sure that the positions are listed correctly. The names of the positions turn over from time to time, and the various mix of folks in, that we have serving at any time changes.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson with that. What I'd like to do is ask that all those in favor of item number 10 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And the ayes have it. Which brings us to board action number 11. Again, it's Jim Thorson introducing board action number 11, which is the approval of authority to issue home ownership bonds, series $250 million. And with that, what I'd like to do is to turn it over to Bernadette MacArthur, our Director of Finance, who will present board action number 11. Bernadette.
Thank you. This is Bernadette MacArthur speaking. This request for our single family bonding authority is a routine item that comes to the board about once a year to allow us to continue our bonding program. Our most recent similar request was made last December, and our most recent single family bond issue was executed this past April, with the proceeds from that issuance expected to be utilized in full by the end of this month. We plan to go to market with a new issuance in October. Based on our current pipeline of registration and on production estimates, staff anticipates issuing approximately $250 million of single-family bonds over the next approximately 12 months. This resolution would authorize that issuance, and the authority would expire in December of 2023. So it's our request to the board to authorize the issuance of $250 million in single-family bonds over approximately the next year to fund the Home Ownership Opportunity Bond Program.
Thank you, Bernadette. I would add that in the Management Committee meeting, we discussed sizing being factors of interest rates, demand, volume, that sort of thing. We spent some time treating on that in terms of sizing, and Management Committee was satisfied that the sizing of this bond request was appropriate. So with that, what I'd like to do is to call for a motion.
Quickly, I make a motion to approve.
Second.
This is Steve. I'll second.
Thank you, Steve. It's Jim Thorson. Do we have any comments or questions?
Kevin Horth, I have a question for you.
Yes, Kevin, please.
Kara, in the bond underwriter meeting that we held recently, it was discussed possibly using variable rate or some derivatives products to maybe bring the rate down a little bit. Have you given more consideration to that, and would you be proposing to do a certain percentage of those?
Not for the upcoming bond issue in October, most likely for the next one. We have engaged our swap advisor, and he's going to start the process of helping us draft the legal agreements for the counterparties for that kind of a transaction.
Any other questions, comments, concerns? Hearing none, please, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? You guys have it. Bernadette, thank you. And Jim Thorson again, introducing board action item number 12, which is approval of the fiscal 2023 operating budget and staffing changes. With that, Carol will reprise this for us. We heard it in management committee.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your patience. I know you've probably all heard it at least once. So I will be very brief. With this action, we're requesting approval of our fiscal year 2023 budget and the addition of four new team members. Let me first focus on the new positions. We're proposing to add a Director of Strategic Initiatives and Partnerships, a position within Christine Hunzinger's group. This new team member will focus in part on advancing our work under the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation grant, development of an impact plan that will serve as a guide to how we interact and develop programs and services for our most vulnerable Rhode Islanders, and build upon our relationships with PHAs to expand services within public housing and also within our financed development, primarily through new lease. We propose to add two additional team members within our IT group, client services engineer, and an operations support specialist. Both positions will provide support on-site and off-site to staff to resolve technical issues and to generally support our operations. We also propose to add an accounting compliance manager in our finance group to assist our team with the new programs that we're administering on behalf of the state and new awards that we've received, such as the Capital Magnet Fund Award. As I mentioned in our previous discussions on the budget, we expect that operations will remain stable even with an anticipated reduction in Peter's area in its volume. We're seeing, of course, an increase, a counterbalance there with our multifamily area with the fees that we're collecting. Our operating expenses will be slightly higher than what we budgeted in 22, but certainly below our 22 forecast. Expenses related to our administration of state and COVID-related programs, as well as technology improvements, are really the largest components of our operating expenses. We expect to rely heavily on bonding for single-family production, around 80% of our volume. We also expect interest rates and a lack of inventory to impact production. We're projecting, I believe, a drop in volume of approximately 17%. The infusion of state and federal dollars will allow us to increase production and preservation on the multifamily side, and as I said, increasing our fee income. In addition, within the governor's budget is a $30 million allocation for down payment assistance, and we hope that that's going to spur additional activity on the homeownership side. We're projecting net income of $5.4 million, which is a decrease over our forecasted net income of $8.3 million, but still solid to the agency. On pages 3 and 4 of the RFA attachment, we outline the various programs that we're proposing to support with agency dollars. They include activities related to preventing homelessness, primarily rental assistance programs, some of which have come over to us from the state. We propose to continue to invest in LISC, in their Neighborhood Development Fund, a great program for our nonprofits. A community development program to support developments in our portfolio, down payment assistance for non-MRB home buyers, and continued support for our ZEOS program that we administer in collaboration with OER. On page 5, we've provided a summary of revenue and expenses. Net interest income is projected to be down slightly due to bond issuance costs. Single family production is estimated at around $420 million, with the greatest percentage of volume through tax-exempt financing. This also affects our gains, which will be down due to the reliance upon bonding. Our fee income is budgeted at $28 million, and much of the $28 million is related to our administration of the federal programs. On the expense side, this fiscal year, we've been able to reduce our contribution to our loan loss reserve. We feel confident that we have adequate coverage for our first mortgages, but we'll add a small amount of money to reserve for secondary financing. And lastly, we've budgeted operating expenses to the agency at $49.8 million. This is a negligible increase over our 22 budget, but well below our forecasted operating expenses for 22. As we have discussed, operating expenses will go down as we wind down the federal programs, Rent Relief RI, and also the Homeowner Assistance Fund, where we're heavily staffed. We've also provided a few charts. On page 6, we've provided you with our projected revenue and expenses by major division, development contributing almost 6% of revenue, with expenses spread fairly evenly across our major divisions. On page 7, the distribution of our revenue areas, with fee income providing the greatest percentage of revenue, and on page 8, the distribution of our expenses. As we discussed in our committee meetings, we're proposing a 3.5% merit increase for eligible staff. We expect temporary staff expenses to remain high for the short term, manning the several federal relief programs that we have. We expect an increase in our benefit expenses because benefits always increase. We expect large expense reductions in advertising and consulting due to wind down. So, Kara, James, Lisa, anything to add?
No, I think that was a good summary.
Oh, you've heard it enough.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to ask for a motion. If anyone has any questions or comments, we'll take those. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Motion. Second.
Yeah, a second from Steve McAllister. Now it's time for comments, questions, concerns.
I have a comment.
Yes.
I think when I always look at the programming budget, I think that gives, kind of our
you know, what we think is important in the next couple of years and, mm-hmm. And whatnot. And one of the things I think that stands out is the homeless part of it. Can you talk about how it's not a big shift, but it is, you know, something that Rhode Island Housing is tackling and bringing in here compared to previous years?
Mm-hmm. It is a growing area, right, of what we do. Some of that is the legacy programs that from the state and the need to continue to support our, you know, vulnerable Rhode Islanders that continue to live in those units. Rents and operating expenses continue to grow. So as the pool shrink as quickly, our contribution has to increase. But I think we've done a good job shifting people to mainstream resources so that they can rely upon the federal resources to support in their living. I know that it's certainly a priority for the state housing department. They're working on this on a daily basis, and so it's a priority to assist vulnerable Rhode Islanders in addition to all the other work that we do.
Correct, and that's why I wanted to highlight it, because something that, you know, it's leading on that. And then on staffing, we were way down 10 years ago, and we're coming back, and there's a lot of transition because you have the temporary workers for different programs and stuff like that. Which department requested some additional staffing, didn't get it, which ones, and is when you are close to a full complement? I know things keep moving each year and whatnot. Are you comfortable that you have your full complement? Or is there still some departments where we need to, in the next year, keep an eye on to see if we need to add or some personnel around?
I think one of the advantages to, you know, being the housing finance agency is that we're able to pivot very quickly. Unlike state departments that might take longer to be able to make changes. With respect to the agency and the various areas, I would say that you're going to see numbers come down, right? Because we have 20, at least 20 staff in homeownership, the Homeowner Assistance Fund. So I think numbers will come down, but out of the strategic plan may come a number of programs that we'll then have to staff up again for in order to implement. So short term, numbers are going to go down, but I can't predict what the board will entertain in terms of strategic initiatives coming forward that are staffing up.
Thank you.
Sorry, Steve. Any other questions, comments, concerns?
This is Kevin Orth.
Yes, Kevin.
A few questions, please. So I assume it was discussed at management committee about some of these new positions. Mm-hmm. Management committee is happy with that. A question about, maybe I'll throw this out. I assume that we're trying to play a balance here because we're seeing maybe the economy with the rise in interest rates, maybe we're not going to get as much single family loan volume, but mm-hmm. we've got these, you know, this federal and state monies coming in primarily on the multifamily side. So. I guess you have forces that are saying, you know, maybe slow down, back off on expenses a little bit, and other forces saying we need to ramp up a little bit. But I'm still rather concerned that we're only showing a net income of about $5 million, which is what, about 0.2% return on assets, when we are really trying to target unofficially maybe a 0.5%, and it's well below our AA-rated peers. So, and also beyond that, is that enough of a cushion should we, you know, maybe the conditions be worse than we're anticipating? Mm-hmm. Are there areas maybe we could cut any expenses, such as it looks like we're doing a huge increase in IT, not to, you know, focus too much on one area, but I just want to throw that out there. I'm a little concerned about it. I'd like to see a little more cushion.
Yeah, so this is Kara. I can speak to having a cushion, and the rating agencies regularly review our financials. They review our portfolio of loans because we have shifted mainly to FHA loans and mortgage-backed securities. We're much more insulated from those types of losses, and so the rating agencies take that into consideration. They also look at our what's called retained earnings, to see how much we have for a cushion there, and our loan loss reserve. So there are different areas that they look to make sure we have the ability to maintain that rating. And they run cash flows out for 30 years. So to ensure whatever bonds we're issuing, we're able to meet those payments, even in a downturn, even, you know, during COVID. And I think we've been pretty successful to maintain our financial strength, even when we have not had certain years of huge net income numbers. Certainly, we hope to beat that $5 million budget, but, you know, we want to make sure that we're accounting for every potential expense that might be coming up this year, especially with the administration of these new federal programs.
Okay, and just one more follow-up, not to beat up on it too much, but are we, with this expenditure of IT, are we, I assume we did an analysis to show, hopefully, that the productivity gains and maybe lower compliance risk, et cetera, will outweigh these costs?
So let me ask Lisa to speak to the technology.
Sure. So the biggest increase that you're seeing in IT is really due to the rent relief program and the Yardie, because that's a look-back billing contract. So you're seeing quite a bit of expense in FY23 that won't be present in FY24. So I think that's going to make a big difference. The other increase, one of the other increases, is the additional staff and the software that we need to support the staff. So as Carol suggested, with the decrease in staff that we might see over time, that number will go down as well. And then the third item that was significant was a reclassification of one of our software systems that we've had in place, but we've now moved it into the software category, and that accounted for, I believe, about $380,000. So really, all in all, it's the new programs and the new people that we've brought on board.
Thank you.
And Kevin, I could speak just one word about the management committee about staffing. There was a lot of discussion about that, and there's no question that from a policy point of view that housing is at the top of the agenda, both the governor and the General Assembly. There's a lot of questions about how the Department of Housing will interact with Rhode Island Housing, and some of the details still need to be worked out, but there's no question that we need resources and that we're going to be applying more resources to be more productive generating housing solutions for our citizens. So that's where the management committee came out on that. And so with that, unless Mary,
one quick question. Carol, I think that the last meeting you might have mentioned that there's going to be a review of the programs and sort of where they reside. Mm-hmm. So in addition to like the programs that are going to go away because government funding is stopping, are any programs moving out of Rhode Island Housing?
I don't think that there's been any determination of that at this time.
Under review?
Yeah. I don't think that anything has been discussed or finalized with respect to that.
Okay, thank you.
Comments, questions? For that, what I'd like to do is have all those who are in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, everyone. And with that, that brings us to board action number 13, and it's Jim Thorson. And I need to inform the board that we're going to be convening a closed session to discuss two potential litigation matters. Carol Ventura, Corinne Myers, and Steve and Richards will be present to guide the discussion and answer questions. So what I'd like to do is to request a motion to convene in closed session pursuant to Rhode Island General Law, Section 42-46-5, Bren A, Bren 2, to discuss two potential litigation matters, housing assistance payment contract support services, formerly Providence-based contract administration, procurement, and Martinez et al. Versus Rhode Island Housing and Mortgage Finance Corporation, PA number 83-319. So with that, I move pursuant to RIGL section 40-46-5, paren A, paren 2, that this public body convene in closed session to discuss two potential litigation matters. Housing Assistance Payments Contract Support Services, formerly Performance-Based Contract Administration Procurement, and Martinez et al. Versus Rhode Island Housing and Mortgage Finance Corporation, CA number 83-319.
I'll second that. Motion.
This is Steve. We need general counsel to give a roll call.
Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of convening in a closed session, RI General Law Section 42.5A2, discuss two potential litigation matters. Say aye. If you're opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thornton?
Aye.
Commissioner Dwyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Orris?
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Commissioner Barry? Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
And Commissioner Saul?
Aye.
The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Brent Smiley's going to fix that.
CJ, we're coming back. Are you still recording?
I am ready.
Thank you.
Very well then, Jim Thorson, and we are now reconvened in open session. There were no votes taken in the closed session, and in closed session, the Board of Commissioners discussed two potential litigation matters, including the Housing Assistant Payment Contract Support Services, formerly Performance-Based Contract Administration Procurement, as well as the Martinez et al. Versus Rhode Island Housing and Mortgage Finance Corporation, CA number 83-319. At this time, I'd like to request a motion to seal the minutes of the closed session.
I'm going to make a motion to seal the minutes.
Do I hear a second?
Second, Mrs.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it, Corinne, and we're ready to move forward with that. Since there's no further business, I'd like to request a motion to adjourn.
Leanne, I make a motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners is now adjourned. Please.
I'm not kidding. We have two more meetings.
No, thank you for participating. So,
administrative though.
We have two quick meetings to
can we have 2 minutes, please?